I haven't ridden one of these before, so I decided to go all the way out there, so I'm sorry in advance. It's called Princess of the Pilbara. Gina sat back hard in her executive, lazy boy office chair, tongue poking out of her lips with concentration, as she looked down at the crisp beige paper in front of her, marked with the letterhead of Hancock Prospecting. The logo featured a little cartoon rendering of Daddy, once mocked up on the back of a cocktail napkin by Sir Unky Joe at a 1973 swingers do, which was dutifully scanned and added to all official Hancock correspondence from then on. Lang winked at her from the top of the page. Oh, Daddy. Lang, leaning nonchalantly against a small navigational plane, ready to explore the soft plains and deep crevices of the Pilbara region. Lang, ready to stumble helpfully onto a massive fucking patch of iron ore, hence allowing for 60 plus more years of raping our Earth. Lang, with that great mop of soft grey hair plastered back real businessy-like on his head, so he looked a little bit like Quagmire from Family Guy, or Tony Abbott upon emerging from the Bondi Surf, i.e. hunky. Age did not weary Lang, and the years did not condemn. Even until his late years, even with the influence of that whore, Rose Porteous, Lang remained such a fucking dilf. Like a gruffer, douchier version of the old man from that movie Up, the movie that made Gina inexplicably throat cry into her cleavage for 2 hours. Cry so hard and heaving and gusty that she had to lock her office up for the arvo and pretend she had an important waxing emergency. Oh yes, yeah, something about her dad still got her rocks off. Her nipples hardened at the thought of him. Her pendulous breasts wobbled, and as she shivered with desire, her two peaks curved out identical love hearts on the paper beneath her. Absent-mindedly tweaking her more sensitive nipple, and with the other hand stroking her fat fountain pen, a baby crocodile's tail turned into a writing implement for her by Bindi Irwin, she tried to focus on her work. This poem wasn't going to write itself. Gina cleared her throat and popped a small metal pebble of iron ore into her mouth. She found that minerals always helped her think. One pebble in her mouth and a lump of coal between her labia was a guarantee of a great creator. So she sucked on and she sucked in and she wrote. Welcome, investors, journos, pollies, to today's Wake Up Australia flight. My last poem didn't go down so well, so let's hope this new one makes it right. Today we go on adventure together to see my new project, the Roy Hill Mine. It's a real taste of the Pilbara region. I hope you have a whale of a time. Gina held her head in her hands. She was just giving it on a plate to the Liberal media. Ever since her first earnest effort at poetry was torn to shreds by the commie lefty scum of Fairfax, she had been plagued by writer's block. It wasn't fair. And she was slowly bringing down Fairfax from the inside as payback. She was a real artist beneath those many, many layers, and she loved introducing colleagues and shareholders to the Hancock Prospecting family via Posey. She tried to start all public speeches with a personally penned little ditty like, "Welcome, short-term workers, to a land hot and rich. You'll be most welcome here if you're not a money-grubbing Filipino bitch." Or ones like, "My name is Gina, and while I might be the boss, I'm just like you, except don't look me in the fucking eye." Some of them didn't rhyme, but that's okay, because she was Gina Reinhart. But, like the time she held down her security guard and forcefully performed a rim job on his puckered, unwilling asshole, coaxing out something that smelt like dirt and oysters and rohypnol from his depths, well, everything just smelt a little too much like shit. "Come on, Gina," she coaxed herself. "What would Daddy do in this sitch?" Unfortunately, this sitch was just like the sad, joyless, mile-high three-banger she'd had en route to a wedding in India last year with Julie Bishop and Barnaby Joyce. Nothing and nobody was coming. Her words, like her comrades and her, wouldn't explode into perfect verse the way they needed to, but instead just fucked on joylessly and mechanically, round and round as the Arabic ocean whirled by beneath them, taunting her and Julie with its rollicking, easy wetness. "Lang, Lang, Lang," she cried out, her panicked calls drawing her assistant to her office door. "Mrs. Reinhardt? Oh, hey, baby.
All good here?
Yeah, baby, just getting the juices flowing. This was the question the assistant was contractually obliged to ask. Do you need any help with that, Mrs. Reinhardt? Gina paused for a moment. Maybe a good tonguing from her assistant could be just the thing to open the creative floodgates. She'd found this to be the case before, lying flat on her back, lazy boy set to munching mode, caftan wedged up to her ribs, pubic hair plaited either side for easy access, and because Daddy loved her in pigtails. 1 minute she'd be screaming out her favourite line from her father's deathbed. Gina, you're a slothful, vindictive and devious baby elephant. And the next she would collapse quietly with sudden poetic inspiration onto her assistant's face, still fucking his adult braces with her collective net worth of 29.17 billion clams. And with that great mogul of an orgasm, the words, like her litres of vaginal colostrum, would get flowing. Assistant would walk away with an early mark and a diamond, beard stinking of giny, teeth blackened by coal, while Gina would write reams and reams of poetry. Gina! Hello, Gina! Her assistant called her out of her reverie. I actually wanted to tell you there's someone out here waiting for you. It's Tony Abbott. Huh? She gasped. He's here early for your Wake Up Australia flight. Says he was so excited he got his days wrong. Now he's stuck in Perth with nothing and no one to do. Should I send him in? Gina clutched her pearl necklace with sweaty, meaty fingers. Should she let him in indeed? She'd never really known how to act around Abbott. He brought out something very particular in her, something she couldn't put a finger on, something that, over a cup of chai latte and pig hearts one night, she and her daughter Ginia had finally coined clit sweats. Tony Abbott gave Gina Reinhardt the clit sweats. Hard. She didn't normally go for jocks, or at least Australian Parliament's version of jocks. She liked men with big hips and asses you could bite and fat, wet, rubbery lips that worked their way down her pubic bone, buzzing and humming out little tuneless symphonies but sending ripples of uninhibited pleasure down every roll of her body, all of them. Fatties doing fatties, that was her sexual preference. So Tony, he was a bit too lean and lithe for her, a bit too sporty and slim. He was sinewy like a baby goat. And even though, as far as she could tell, his junk filled out the front of his Speedos all right, he was just a bit too buff to take her fancy. Gina had been flicked to enough episodes of Sex and the City to know the fugglier the guy, the better the cunnilingus. So if Tony was going to eat her out, he'd better eat some fucking cheesecake first. Just by the way, in case you are wondering, Gina identified as half Miranda career woman and half Samantha sex fiend, with a small nod to Charlotte with the pearls and the preference for Jewish guys. She did not find any carrying herself. She hated that bitch. All right, let him in, said Gina. She wrenched her right hand from under her Maggie T business kilt and stood up. Ready to greet the man and shake his hand. She wondered if she'd break him with the weight of her lust, and the thought made her dizzy with desire. The bulletproof glass door of Gina's office swung open, and there was the opposition leader himself. Soft, sticky, outy red ears gone transparent with the light behind him. Big rabbit teeth stretched into a friendly smile. Nose screwed up at the smell of her office, a mixture of Vagina Sweat and Fantasy by Britney Spears. Hello, Gina. Thank you for meeting me, he said, shaking her hand. In the pussy-hot humidity of her office, their hands stuck together. Please call me Mrs. Reinhardt. Mrs.? Yes, Mrs. I might be the richest woman in Australasia and divorced, but I will still hold on to my married name for some reason that my biographer Jess Bellamy doesn't understand. Now, Tony, why are you here? Why are you really here? I know how anal you are. Peter Slipper told me. You'd never mix up the dates for my Wake Up Australia flight, so there must be something else going on. The room was getting hot. Gina didn't believe in open windows, or windows at all, for that matter. In fact, the office of Hancock Prospecting was 200 metres underground, which was a bit shit for ventilation, but awesome for 3 p.m. worm snacks. Tony blushed bright pink. He was so pretty when he blushed. like a baby ferret peeking into a dollhouse in a kid's film, or a big loose shit after a beetroot cleanse. It's just, Mrs. Reinhardt, I wanted to come in to propose myself as your next travel companion. Next time you're invited to a big do overseas or an important function, I thought you could take me with you. After all, why should Julie and Barnaby get all the perks? Perks, Tony? Asked Gina, noticing a thick globule of clit sweat running down her inner thighs and inexplicably her chin too. What perks? And then suddenly Tony was right next to her, breathing in her hairspray and chapstick and that weird scent that had followed her around ever since her belly button got infected last November. Here are two perks right here. And he ripped his smart business shirt open and he carefully peeled off his Bonds singlet, getting it stuck over his head for a worrying 20 seconds. And he grabbed both of Gina's trembling hands, placing them on his two quivering man nipples. Tony began to gesture Gina towards her executive racing car bed in the corner of her office with soft, enticing murmurs of coal seam gas and iron ore. But Gina stopped him quick with a cold pellet in the mouth. What's going on here, Tony? He spat out the pebble and placed it sexily in her cleavage. I don't know if he's sexily. I want you, Gina. Ever since you introduced yourself to me at that neo-Nazi benefit, you shone in that sateen muumuu, your face so wet and alive. I dream about you, Mrs. Reinhardt. Parliament sitting goes on around me and all I can think about is your round, moist face like a pillowy, pockmarked moon. I can't even jack off to Julia anymore, no matter how she goads me in question time. It's just about you. All of Gina's Christmas dinners were coming at once. And it looked like sweet, sweet fucking was entree, main and dessert. She sucked in warm air to cool down, to calm down. But can I trust you, Tony? If you want to be my lover, I need to know you support me. I need a firm show of support in fighting the mining mineral resources tax. Tony knew what he had to do. He dropped his drawers and he pulled down his Mr. Men briefs and his extremely long and skinny, like sea snake style member throbbed its assent and desire at Gina. After he uncoiled it from its little scroll shape like a fire engine hose. This was more like it. Tony swaggered towards Mrs. Reinhardt. Is this a firm enough show of support? He wiggled his long, hideous penis at Gina. Oh, I just imagine. It was... It was so long and skinny that it dipped in the middle and hung like a candy cane down from his hips. And it was on. Gina swept all her carefully ordered mineral deposits, velvet-topped hard hats, personally engraved Benoit balls onto the floor and threw Tony onto her leather desk. Oh, Tony, she moaned. Frack me now. Tony gasped with hot, sweaty desire. Oh, Gina, oh, princess of the Pilbara, I want to dig deep into your wet, dusky folds. I think down there, Gina, is where I'll find gold. And the assistant stood outside Gina's door, listening in horror. He heard yelps of, take this gag order, and screeches of, fuck me like you're fucking the free press, and roars of, taste the Pilbara region, taste it! And the bulletproof glass steamed up with sex and ego and money and a bit of diarrhea. Together, Gina and Tony exploded in one huge, wealthy burst of orgasm, and their roars shook the walls and their moans fractured the ceilings, and this underground lair began to shake and rattle, and rocks started raining from the ceiling, and the pleasure-dizzy screams of Hope Downs and Roy Hill and Bolt and Clive became muffled and became quieter. And became silent. And Gina's lair sunk down into the earth where it belonged. And her and Tony sunk down with it. And her assistant got stuck there too, but sacrifices for the greater good. And the three of them were stuck down there forever, cut off from the outside world, unable to run a business, unable to run a 2013 government, unable to do anything except hate fuck and draw dongs on photos of Julia Gillard. and kill and eat their many progeny. And that is the story of how Gina Rinehart and Tony Abbott fucked their way into eternal purgatory.